You're listening to the Talking Forest podcast with your host, Kendra Burns. In today's world, it's important to communicate your story online, and Kendra can help you by diving into social media and providing you with free tips and insights on how to build your organic social media following and shine online. Having been raised low income, first in her family to go to college, and a proud international military spouse, Kendra develops creative media content across many social media platforms from anywhere in the world. Her inspiration comes from the people who give her hope and believe in her so she can believe in you. Follow the Talking Forest podcast today to see how she lives the dream of a traveling virtual entrepreneur and get your tech tips as we keep up with the latest on social media.
Hi, this is Kendra Burns from the Talking Forest podcast. I'm so excited to have Danielle Atkins on today. She is actually in Georgia, and she has built Land and Ladies, and it's a very awesome company that is helping landowners, and I'm so excited to hear her journey and have a free-flowing conversation about where she's come from, what she's been doing, and some of her things about the forest sector and things that she could change and some other awesome things that she's been doing. So hi, Danielle.
Hey, Kendra, thanks for having me on today. So excited to be here.
Yes, I'm very excited to have you on. And we've been crossing paths for, I think, a few years now in social media and other forms. We've been on, you know, some mutual webinars as well for like Society of American Foresters. And I see that you came from the Southeast SAF and that you were helping them for a little while. So I think it's really cool to finally be able to talk with you on the podcast.
Yes, I know. I've heard your name. I've seen your stuff all over the place for probably about a couple years. And we kind of keep on crossing paths and saying, yeah, we'll touch base. So I'm glad we're finally able to do that.
So I wanted to start with your humble beginnings and your first job and that kind of thing, where you came from, to talk about where we are now.
So where I come from, you'll have to go back a little bit. So humble beginnings. So you'll have to go back into my upbringing. So I'm not naturally from like the rural South per se. My dad was Army. I grew up kind of, you know, traveling around and moving a lot of times. I know you know a lot about moving and the military life. And so I grew up with that probably every like 2 to 3 years, roughly, just on average. And so forestry was not something that came naturally in my background, always in suburban or military type bases. And then when I went to school, I actually went to University of Georgia for pharmacy, and that quickly changed, of course. And so while I was trying to figure things out, that's when I came across the Warnell School of Forestry, and actually have a bachelor's in wildlife sciences. And the idea was, when I first went into it, was that I wanted to be like a middle school science teacher. I wanted to like educate the middle youth on the potential of science and the exciting parts of it. Science never came super easy to me, so I felt I could be a decent teacher. But I didn't want to be stuck and pigeonholed with an education degree, because all my favorite teachers were always those that didn't have like a necessary traditional education degree, that came from a different background. But while I was there too, you know, you're exposed to so many different opportunities. And that's how I kind of stumbled across forestry by accident. I was really involved with Forestry Club during the Forestry Conclave and got really integrated with the Warnell School of Forestry. And so I decided to stay on through grad school, and actually turned down an internship to Disney, which was a little heartbreaking for like 72 hours because that was my dream job up until that point. I had to decide, was I going to do forestry or was I going to do environmental education? And I chose forestry. And so my first internship was actually with Weyerhaeuser. And, you know, it's okay. With Weyerhaeuser, you know, I kind of figured out like, yes, this is where I belong. I went through grad school. And then my husband's also a forester. And so after that, he landed the job first in Brunswick, Georgia, with what was Plum Creek at the time. So I followed him here and then was job searching, which can be a little difficult when you and your spouse are in the same field. But that's how I ended up with the state, the Georgia Forestry Commission, originally. So because I never intended to go into government work or county work, I always wanted private. But that's not how God had intended that to be, apparently. And so I ended up working with the state for 4.5 years before I started kind of branching off and doing my own thing.
I had a similar path that God set in place for me. And he gave me a why of like, do you want to go this path or do you want to go this path? And the private sector was bumping up against the State Department of Natural Resources for me in 2015. And I didn't know how to get my foot in the door in the state, but it really wasn't important to me if the private sector was going to pick me up. So I can understand how that kind of thing, like, it's really hard to walk with a plan. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, but this is available and these people care about me and they can create a position for me. That happened in forest policy. And that's how I landed in that kind of position in the private sector. I was offered, you know, seasonal fire positions, of course, with the DNR, but it wasn't something that I wanted. I didn't want to just do seasonal work and then, you know, go through that kind of thing, because that's the most enticing thing about the forest sector and the outdoor sector is that they try to get you into internships and seasonal positions when you're young to grow you into something that goes into forestry and, you know, stays very alive in forestry. But that's not a traditional path that everyone can follow. And if you can get into the private sector, like you did, eventually, that is like it's like a ceiling that you can break. You're not stuck in a salary. You're not stuck in, you know, NR1, NR2, NR3, the series that you have to follow and go promote within the state. And that kind of wasn't what I was looking to do. I was looking to do non-traditional. And so I think that you and I were faced with some of that, and that makes so much sense now talking to you about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And well, for me, I'd always, I don't know, really like just the, I guess, more old school, like vertical integrated, almost like having your own timberlands. And I know there's no vertical integration companies anymore, but that was kind of like my mindset. I like pine plantations. I like, you know, the intensive silviculture, traditional pine rotations. And so I was interviewing with a whole bunch of other folks and it just wasn't clicking. I wasn't getting those positions for one thing or another. And then the county or the state happened to have a position, and I had a old classmate that was there. He's like, hey, give us a call. And I was like, well, okay, because, you know, at this point, I've been job hunting for like, I don't know, 4 months, maybe just not having success. I needed to do something. And so I was like, well, okay. And me and my old supervisor would always laugh and be like, yeah, like I needed somebody, you needed something. So we're like, yeah, okay, we'll make this work. I answered Basel area, you know, like somewhat educatedly. And so that's how I ended up with the state originally. It was always something I was like, I'm never going to be here. But then of course I did like it. It had a lot of perks. It exposed me to a lot of things. And if I hadn't taken that, honestly, I wouldn't have landed Ladies and where I'm at today.
And yeah, same here. And so it's really good that we have a balance of that private knowledge versus the state and government, and the way that that works in forestry, and learning those internal things that actually is an asset to owning a business, because there's a lot of conversations I watched as a forest policy assistant that I was like, oh, that's why things are the way they are. That's how this happens. You know, so I was able to go, okay, well, what do I want to implement moving forward? And how do I want to move the sector forward, you know, with having my own voice and giving others a voice?
And so when I was with the state, I was originally a county forester and I covered 5 to 7 counties at any time. And, you know, traditionally that's kind of all the landowners were that upper age males, and especially white males. And the women that would come across, they usually had very similar stories. My husband just passed, or my dad just passed, and now I have this land and I don't know what to do with it. And then I was promoted to stewardship specialist, where I had a lot more flexibility to do like outreach and develop those programs. And at that point in time too, I was also introduced to Woman Owning Woodlands, Amanda Malfrey, up in the Maine area. That's when I first met her, was when I was in that role. And there was some interest of like, hey, we should do some woman focused workshops too. And so I started branching out and doing individual women workshops and growing that. But then I got pregnant with my firstborn son, and I didn't want to do the traditional 9-to-5 workload. I wanted to be more home with him, more flexible with him. So that's when I left the state. I stayed with him probably for about like 6 to 9 months before deciding if it was the right decision. And I got an opportunity to work as an independent registered forester with a nonprofit, still doing outreach work, but with the Sustainable and Forestry Land Retention Program. Which I had relationship with as the county state forester, But now I was just working for them as a contract forester, just 2 days a week, part-time, still developing workshops. And I did that with them for about 12 to 18 months, had my second. Now I have my third and she's the last. And through that process too, though, it was kind of like, I still want to work with women. And so I would kind of, I touched base a little bit with a few of my old women landowners, like, hey, is this something you'd be interested in? And then at the end of 2019, the University of Georgia reached out and asked if I wanted to partner with them on a grant to do 6 women workshops focused on connecting women with consultant foresters. And so I was like, yeah, sure, absolutely. We kind of shot for the moon on it. It was like, let's go big on this one. And, you know, applied for a 2-year grant, let him apply for a 2-year grant. I just agreed to partner with him and help with logistics and marketing and developing these workshops. And we happened to get it. It was with the Bradley Murphy Trust. And that's when those 6 traditional workshops happened. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, if I'm going to do this as a business, now is the time to do this while I'm doing these workshops. And then of course COVID happened and it changed a lot.
yes, COVID changed a lot for me too, because I was full-time for 2 years by the time COVID hit, and I had 6 trips planned while I was living in Europe to do all these touch points and meet all these people and be involved in, you know, the national and international and bridge all that together. And it definitely made everything pivot. And so you and I, we both pivoted to virtual models because that's what made sense. And so that actually goes right into what is your role right now? And you are doing an amazing thing and creating virtual workshops with Land and Ladies, your company.
Oh yeah. Thank you. And so at first I was a little hesitant. We kind of switched to that virtual online academies, 1-day workshops, 1/2-day clinics out of necessity, because that's what we had to do. We did actually still do our first in-person workshop in October in Athens. We just kept it a lot smaller. And then after that, that's when we started hybrid events, but that was also when we innovated the 6-week academy. We've tried like sticking to hybrid, a little bit of in-person, a little bit virtual, but as you've been growing, you know, COVID's still here and society's still, you know, concerned and trying to stay safe. For me, it's still been more of a push to get more innovative and try new things. And I feel that going almost completely online is the right decision for my business model. It's going to help us scale, but more so because it allows me to take the traditional events and traditional workshops and repurpose them, restructure them into a new approach that isn't done in our industry. Providing the information women need, you know, like, I want to know how to plant my trees. Now you don't have to wait 6 months to 18 months for that one workshop to come by near your town. You can kind of come and, you know, get that information off the back, whether it's just a basic free webinar by connecting with me and connecting you to the other women's programs out there, or online modules that'll be coming out, or the academy, or whatever it is. So I'm creating these same information, but making it applicable to the woman that's looking for information, making it relatable and making it accessible when she's needed.
What I am hearing from you is that there was a similar thinking in that we wanted to bridge some worlds that we knew we could do, and we could make it more accessible. And the reason why for the audience that it's so important for women is because we sometimes are blocked. We are gatekeeped from things. We have some issues with adversity that we face that is unimaginable, but it does happen. And we are now talking about it openly. So not only is she providing a space accessibly that you don't have to wait for these kind of pieces of information, but you also are able to talk with other people that are in likewise situations and connect through these workshops as well.
And I mean, I can't ever say I've been, I guess, blocked from anything per se, but I have heard stories of women mostly being intimidated or hesitant, that no one wants to sound dumb, you know? So they show up to these other events, find out they're one of like 3 women out of 40 men. And, you know, they don't want to raise their hand because they don't want to sound stupid in front of the audience. Because all the men, usually they're mostly foresters that are there for continuing ed, especially. And they all know each other because they've all been coming to this for a while. They've been part of this network, and they know the jargon. And so she's hesitant to show up, and therefore she might not show up again. And so when she shows up to my materials, it's a lot of women with really similar stories, but she no longer feels intimidated to ask that question, probably because someone else already asked it usually. And then she's like, oh, thank goodness you asked. I've been wondering about that. And it's just more of that open atmosphere. And then we actually do have a few men that do show up too, which is fun to kind of see the tables turn in some of those instances.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as getting these out there, my my platform is, you know, communicating openly, using social media, that kind of thing. So what has been your favorite social media platform to get all this information out there?
Ooh, favorite social media platform. Well, I would have said Facebook originally, but now it's a good mix between Instagram, Facebook, and I have been utilizing LinkedIn, you know, more recently, the last like month and a half. I'm trying to do that a lot more. Because I will say, I think most of my following is on Facebook, but I get a lot more engagement on Instagram. But a lot of the engagement I get on Instagram tend to be people in the field, I'm kind of noticing. And then LinkedIn seems to be like slowly being a nice little grassroots for me. And LinkedIn seems to be a good atmosphere for other people to share. And that's kind of what I'm noticing. Biggest spread, I guess, is actually still mouth, like word of mouth.
Yes.
And so it's the grandmother that brings her daughter who brings her friend down the road. And so that's still kind of the biggest spread for me right now. But between social media, probably Instagram, Facebook, and then LinkedIn right now, but that's just based on engagement level. I'm still looking into which is the best approach. And I just added on a new team member for communications, and she's actually going to help me, you know, look into like what's trending, helping a lot with my logistics going on, and help me strategize. And she's a non-forester, which will be really helpful.
Yeah.
For like the thinking out of the box.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people should think of that and use that. I've been to conferences where I've had researchers talk about what you're saying, the word of mouth still being important. And so as far as a research paper, I was in 2 years ago, I was listening to someone talking about their research on this exact thing in our sector. Word of mouth was number one, websites, and then social media. So what Danielle and I are seeing and, you know, talking about in social media, I think that that model that I just said will actually flip and social media will become in, you know, 5 to 10 years, maybe further number one. And then word of mouth is still going to be important and printed, you know, things are still going to be important, but we're trying to actually target our audiences and figure out, you know, what is the best way to reach everyone and to openly have people come in and it for it to be accessible. And it's a big balancing act. So it's really good to bring someone in to help you with that.
Yep. Yep. And what I'm trying more of too, is taking what's, you know, kind of like what's trending and then repurposing it for our industry. So instead of just doing educational posts, whatever, like the trending soundbite is for TikTok. And I don't know, we may end up on TikTok. I won't be dancing, I promise. but you know, like just some of those general background sounds that seem to be showing up everywhere, and using that, but sharing our message. So that way I'm kind of meeting, especially the younger generation, the 30-year-olds, the 40-year-olds, the ones that are going to be inheriting next. Maybe I will get lucky and catch the 20-year-olds, but, you know, catching that next generation before they get to their mother's position where she's inherited it unexpectedly. So that's something I'm going to be moving more towards, and you'll see more atypical content in the future.
Yeah, I think some of the challenges that face the landowners, I've heard without talking to you much, but I have heard that people will literally show up with a check saying, you know, we have 90 grand, will you take this? And that's really unfortunate for people that are already disadvantaged or people that are, you know, minorities, and they think that it's just, you know, fast cash. And that may be something that I think you're helping bridge that kind of thing, and educating people is the best way for them not to take that kind of offer. Because what if, you know, their 40 to 100 acres is worth more than that? They haven't had a consulting forester come out And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't know is available, is consulting foresters. So whenever you talk about that on social media, you know, I'm right there with you in talking about how we need to understand the value of our trees, how to manage them, that kind of thing, because that can happen. Someone can get on your doorstep and say, you know, here's some money for your land. And if you don't know what it's worth, that can be really dangerous for you and your family.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of those stories of someone coming up, or that letter in the mail. So we've seen you have timberland. We're offering a cash price value. And especially if you've just inherited it because of a death in the family, you're in that emotional response. $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 cash can seem like a lot if you don't know that your timber and your land is worth 10 or 20 times that sometimes. And so that's what I'm trying to like show, is like, maybe selling those trees to that person is the right, you know, response, the right option for them. Maybe they are perfectly ethical and happen to be next door. And that is the best resource, but making an educated decision that you can feel confident in and not regret 2 years down the line when you find out you should have gotten, you know, 10 times that value.
Yeah, exactly. So going further into like what we're facing today, what are the major issues facing our forest sector today?
Major issues. So I think it depends on which part of, you know, the U.S. you're at. So I'm going to focus on the Southeast. And I would say the major issues probably are new ownership, I'm going to say. And I'm going to phrase that with like quotations around it, of new ownership by inheritance to the spouse or to the next generation and absentee. So those that haven't grown up with their land, haven't managed their land, their dad or spouse took care of everything, didn't have a written management plan, and now they are liable for, you know, this thing is what they're going to call it. They're not going to call it an asset yet because they don't view it as an asset. It's just a liability that now they have to pay property taxes for and make all these decisions and not know where to go. And that can be very, very overwhelming. So you add that to if they happen to be near urban areas and that urban sprawl, that development potential, if they're not maximizing maybe conservation use for property taxes, they might get taxed out of owning their land and lose it at tax sales or whatever like that. Now, there's no research to that. The University of Georgia did do some research in conjunction with my workshops, and she actually asked a lot of those same questions. And Kendra, I'm going to have to send you like her highlights because I don't remember exactly, but it was really similar to see that next generation was actually a common theme of worry from corporations as well as women landowners. That was one of the biggest concerns they both had. And then next after that, they both viewed limited access to knowledge, like not knowing what to do, as another big concern. And I'm speaking strictly from women inheritance as well as industry kind of looking at what is a potential concern out there. And there's some other things, and she's got some nice stats that you can look at and view and, you know, determine how you want to do it. But that was really interesting and not something that was looked at from the woman's perspective, because I'm sure you know, but not a lot of people may know, is that women are growing in statistics as being the primary decision makers. From in 2013, it doubled from 11% to 22%. I think there's supposed to be some more recent data nationwide. I'm not 100% sure, but if you just look, that was almost 10 years ago. You can expect if that number hasn't doubled, at least has gone up by probably another like 5 to 10%. So it's at least almost upper 20s to 30%, I'd guess. Yeah. And so, you know, that's a growing concern. If you have a growing population that doesn't know what to do and is at risk of being taken advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think those two things tied in when earlier we talked about people being offered cash when they don't know about it, and then also having your name in a will, and all of a sudden now you're a 40,000 acre, you know, or 40,000, you know, 400, you have 400 acres that, you know, your grandma just gave you. And it's just like, well, what do we do with this? And it's so much bridging that we have now with education to catch up. And I do remember with my work in the Washington Tree Farm program, where I would go out and we'd talk to landowners, they would also have issues with estate planning as well, because they would have people in the family that might be interested, or they may have, you know, some generations out, like your kids that they would write it in, but the kids don't know about it yet, that kind of thing. And so that estate planning gets really hard. So is that also something that Land and Ladies is working on and trying to help?
Yes. Yes. So I have been working with an estate planning lawyer in Georgia, Veronica McClendon. And she's kind of collaborated with me on several things. She wrote the last chapter on the Academy, which is like an estate planning basics 101. It has some action items in there. She was a breakout session speaker at my symposium. And we've actually had some powwow meetings about how we can collaborate further in the future. But I do view, estate planning and the legal side so important, because if you don't have that, you know, kind of lined up, it doesn't matter what you do for your forest land if you don't have those next legal affairs kind of planned out.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are ways that you're changing it. And I'm so excited that you've provided that platform so people can do that and understand how to go about that. So the next question is, since we're talking about issues, and I think you've already provided some solutions, but is there anything else that we can do to help forestry change for the better?
I mean, I'm such a positive thinker for the industry in general. I've had nothing but good experiences. And in my personal history, my experiences, changing for the better, I think what we could do a lot better of is kind of showing the positive sides of what the forest industry does to the general society part that doesn't know about it. So I know a lot of times people can get frustrated with a lot of emphasis on urban areas and urban, like, you know, cities. Like, why are we focused so much on sharing content there, having meetings there? But it is so important because that is where a lot of the voting demographic comes from. And if they don't understand what the forests provide for them, they aren't going to vote favorably for good policies, especially taxes, thinking, oh my goodness, taxes.
Yes.
But a lot of, you know, the carbon stuff right now is kind of a big hit, and understanding that, you know, using wood and green materials in future development, and how that is helping with carbon offsets, you know, I think that ultimately will provide the forest industry with so much more positive imagery. And maybe we'll see a little bit less of so much misleading information out there about quote unquote deforestation.
I think I'm really excited that you have some campaigns already rolling about this, and I'm sure you'll put more out. But the thing that's really interesting to me from 6 years of being in the communication side of forestry is that I've seen people put their head in the sand and just say, you know, I'm just going to stay in my neck of the woods and not really get out there and do the policy work or be a part of, you know, the policy changes. And I think that's actually backfired, because now our generation, 30-year-olds, 35-year-olds, or younger, are now going to be catching up, per se, for all of this misinformation, because what that's done is that's given the other sectors the voice for our sector. And that's where this misinformation sometimes comes from. And when I started doing social media, I was really doing a lot of grassroots efforts in groups to help people understand and bridge recreation and forestry and landowners and forestry, and talking about how, you know, landowners have the ability to, you know, provide you clean water, and that, you know, we have forest practices laws in almost every state, and that these types of things are available for, you know, people to see and the public to see. But we're not, as a sector, reaching the public either, because we've put our head in the sand for so long. So I'm excited that, you know, you're kind of doing that landowner work, reaching out to, you know, that demographic of women that need it, and providing a platform to show the difference in misinformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm not very good at policy, and so I can't rather say if we put our head in the sand. I would say it was probably just a different perspective. No one really expected for, like, urban areas to grow in so much power that they have now, especially in voting rights. I mean, I can say, like, I don't think anyone expected Georgia to turn blue at this latest election, but no, here it is. It's blue. And so now we have to kind of, like, okay, we got to take different approaches, new things, because a lot of the forestry schools, you know, a lot of their applicants are coming from people that don't have traditional forestry backgrounds. We don't have as many loggers now. And, you know, 20 years ago, who would have ever thought that this would ever be an issue, and especially COVID. So I think it's just different approaches. And I'm sure in 20 years, they'll say they wish that we had done something a little differently. But all it is just tackling one issue at a time for what you can do. And all I'm trying to do is just, you know, get more women engaged, get more women to show up and ask the right questions and feel comfortable with what they're dealing with. And I believe most foresters have the best intentions, especially when they're working with women. They may not communicate it well. Oh yeah. So they have the best intentions, but sometimes that communication doesn't always convey. And so if they ask the right questions and, you know, they're still getting those same answers, then they can feel comfortable that they're being heard, they're being addressed. And if, you know, my job gets done right, if all of our jobs gets done right, then we'll see the women engagement show up in other avenues, in the forestry associations, in other landowner associations, in those one day NRCS workshops. We'll see them going from 3 women in the audience to 15, 20, 25 women, maybe if we're lucky, one day half and half. And so that's kind of the vision I'm going for.
Absolutely. And we have your full support. You know, we're also partnering with you, and I'm also in the Forest Her North Carolina, which has a lot of landowners. Mm-hmm. So I've already been offered to go take tours and take pictures of women who own land, and it's going to look different. You know, it's not going to be that typical monocultural thing that people think, you know. So I think changing perspectives and changing it into a positive thing, saying, you know, especially out in the Southeast with longleaf pine, I'm excited to have landowners in our groups talking about prescribed burning and openly, you know, showing here's our photography of this going on our property, and normalizing it, because that's something in the Southeast that if you don't do for longleaf, you're not going to get the regeneration or get the growth that you want. And not only that, but some of these tree farms aren't going to be for timber. They're going to be for carbon credits, like you were talking about earlier. And so there's those different goals. And my husband and I are looking to also retire. He has 4 years left to his 20, and we're looking to get, you know, 200 acres or so as well, somewhere in the South, you know, and go into this journey as well. So I also look up to what you're doing, and probably will be more educated because of what you're providing, and have the ability to go into those virtual workshops and courses myself and learn more than I would have from, you, like you said, a regimented state course.
Yeah. And that's the idea, is that someone like you, even if you have, you know, some of the basic knowledge, if you go to a completely new terrain, you know, maybe you need different type of information, or maybe you have all this like education, you've attended a lot of these other events and workshops that, you know, I can't speak enough, they're great information, but information for information's sake doesn't translate to action on the ground. And so that is something I am working on, is how do you take this information and make it applicable so that the woman listening to it is moving that needle. And so instead of maybe a 60-minute webinar, I'll break it down to like four 10 to 15 minute parts that she can watch and listen to while doing dishes. And then there's ends with like a journal prompt question that she can address and reflect on. And that way, ideally, it'll help her take those baby steps she needs to feel comfortable and confident moving forward.
Absolutely. I listen to these types of things in the bathtub. So, you know, that's the only time you get for a break. And if you have that 20 minutes, that's when you go listen to this type of workshop and webinar. That one of the last questions that we have for the podcast today is, what does Forest Proud mean to you personally? And this is our sponsor today, so I'm excited to reminisce about Forest Proud with Danielle. Talking Forests is happy to have #ForestProud as an in-kind sponsor of the Talking Forest podcasts. What is Forest Proud? We are a community committed to making choices that keep forests as forests. We work at family businesses, forest product companies, conservation, recreation organizations, universities, and government agencies. And many of us have done so for generations. We are hikers, hunters, bikers, landowners, loggers, truck drivers, architects, researchers, foresters, students who work in and care about and share a passion for forests and forest products. The #ForestProud community is bigger than you might think. What does Forest Proud mean? It's a good question. Forest Proud means different things for different people, and that's a good thing. We all have a part to play in making choices that keep our forests as forests and help make our neighborhoods, communities, and lives better.
If you live, work, or play in the forests or with forest products, you're a part of the Forest Proud community. ForestProud.org welcomes you.
Forest Proud, I love them. They were a great supporter of the original Academy, and I still talk to them, and I try to support them when possible. So Forest Proud is really just being a proud landowner, despite what your objectives and goals are on your property. Whether you're in the Southeast, Northeast, Northwest, we all have a key part of the forest being healthy and therefore being managed. So being forest proud is, you know, whether you manage the forest for yourself or you just support active management for healthy management of the forest to support all of our life, from homes to the food we eat to just providing that periodic income for that family in North Carolina. So that's what Forest Proud means to me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great that we all come together and have that, you know, similar goal in mind. And then keeping forests as forests, I think, is one of the best things that we can do. And that's just helping everyone understand from all levels and bringing everyone together in that. And I'm excited that you are a role model for that and helping other women and people do something with their land that is meaningful and educating them and bridging a lot of those gaps that we have from all the other amazing programs. So I'm wrapping up with what is the most valuable tip that you can tell our listeners? And do you have anything else to add?
Never stop learning. So even if you feel like you've been managing your property for a very long time, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try some of these new ways. Or just because you've always managed your property one way or your dad's always managed it one way doesn't mean that you can't take a different approach. And just because it hasn't been done doesn't mean it can't be done for the most part. So, yeah.
And I think,
thank you so much.
Yes. Reaching out to other people and harnessing that network that comes with all this as well, I think is really important. So you're so welcome. I'm glad to have your voice, and I'm glad that Forest Proud could sponsor this today. So yeah, I'm excited to see where we are in the future and where Land and Ladies goes with everything. And I'm super proud to be able to be here with you as well. So thank you, Danielle.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time you've had.